This is Prop Point on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen from RotoWire.com. We'll be with you for the next hour. A lot of baseball and football news. First round of preseason games in. We'll do some player props, player to pass it. John McKechnie is going to join us to talk a little college football. Week zero is rapidly approaching on us here. We'll talk some over-unders for Monday baseball slate in the final segment of today's show. Nick, let's jump out and talk a little Eagles right now. We spent some time talking about this on our fantasy show on SiriusXM Fantasy. Landon Dickerson got carted off at practice yesterday for the Eagles. All-pro guard. They also already lost Mekhi Becton to the Chargers in free agency. So all of a sudden, we have question marks about the Eagles' interior offensive line.
Yeah, which is not something you thought you'd ever question, given that we are discussing what might be the best offensive line. And well, even after losing Mekhi Becton, I mean, that's kind of what you expect when you're a team as talent rich as the Eagles. You know, there are going to be some vultures coming in free agency, and we still need to wait and see as far as what the official diagnosis is. Like you said, Dickerson carted off at practice. I saw some reports he was able to put a little bit of weight on that leg. You know, initially it looked like he maybe stepped on a teammate's foot and it could be more of an ankle injury, but they're calling it a knee. We'll get an MRI today. Should have some more news later this afternoon. You know, their backup left guard, Kenyon Green, you know, got hurt in the preseason game on Thursday. He's dealing with a shoulder injury. And, you know, if Dickerson's injury is something that's going to cause him to miss time, especially significant time, you're looking at a rookie in Trevor Keegan. You're looking at kind of a retread in Matt Pryor. You know, you're always going to trust the Philadelphia Eagles to kind of lean on their, you know, their institutional knowledge of these offensive linemen and figure out a way to make this work. But, you know, much like we've talked about with Rashawn Slater and the Chargers, like it's not something that's maybe going to derail your entire season, but it does make you think twice a little bit, especially, you know, when you're eyeing up some of these players in fantasy football.
Absolutely. Eagles are still heavy favorite to win the division, favorite to win 11 and a half. The win total is at 11 and a half. There hasn't been a repeat champion. I think you may have heard this in the NFC since the dawn of time. Actually, no, 2004. Really? And it was the Eagles that did it. But if you're looking for a pathway for them not to repeat, it's something like this, where all of a sudden something that was a bedrock for them is now at least a question mark. If they've dealt with the same thing in their secondary, they made a trade, a little under the radar trade this over the weekend with the Raiders to add a defensive back. Seems like something that they're pretty proactive at addressing things that really concern them. I'd expect Howie Roseman to do the same, but you know, this is how it happens. And regression should be some of the conversation anyhow. To that end, you know, the 11 and a half is juiced to the under at most books.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And part of that is the schedule, right? And again, I don't want to make any conjectures about the Landon Dickerson injury, but you know, if he were to miss the first handful of games to begin the season, the Eagles have a really, really tough slate to start things out. I mean, yeah, you get the Cowboys at home. You're a touchdown favorite in that one. Who knows if Michael Parsons is going to be out there, but you go to Kansas City, Super Bowl rematch in week two. You host the LA Rams in week three. You go to Tampa Bay in week four. And then you're hosting what might be the best defense in football in the Denver Broncos in week five. You know, things do soften up a bit after that. They play the Giants two of the next three games. So you'd expect to be able to make some hay there. But, you know, later in the season, you still play the Lions. You play Green Bay. You play at the LA Chargers. Obviously, you have the two games against the Commanders. And you got a game in Buffalo sandwiched between those two Commanders games. So very, very difficult schedule and, you know, going to be imperative, I think, for the Eagles to be able to get off on the right foot. And, you know, with a team like this that seems so rock solid, all you know, at basically every position group, you know, an injury like this is kind of the type of information that you're looking for. If you're looking to fade the Philadelphia Eagles for whatever reason, I mean, we've seen this happen with teams every single year, right? You have an injury on the offensive line, a position group that you feel great about, that can have ripple effects throughout the entire offense.
Yeah, and it even happens like under lesser teams. We saw the New Orleans Saints last year get off to an amazing start. Eric McCoy gets hurt in game three against the Eagles. Now, granted, it was against the Eagles, and that's part of it there. But the Saints' offense wasn't the same. You know, so you can see a key offensive lineman changing, you know, going down really changes things. That's why I have some trepidations about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tristan Wirfs as well. The Chargers losing Rashawn Slater. That's a big one. Obviously, we covered that thoroughly here on the channel last week when it happened. So no need to relitigate that, but it's a big, big deal there. Ironically, the Chargers win total hasn't changed. It's still 9.5. So something there that, maybe you find an opportunity there. Maybe you want to boost up the Broncos ever so slightly higher there in juxtaposition to that. Let's talk about the Brewers. Let's talk about one of your favorite things to talk about. Can they be stopped? Should they be broken up? Should they not be even allowed to sign minor league free agents this offseason, Nick?
It's just, it's starting to feel unfair, isn't it? Right. I mean, you just look at all the hitters in this Brewers lineup, and I just feel bad for the rest of Major League Baseball. Another just kind of unbelievable series, right? And this one, you know, they've now won 9 in a row. They've swept 3 straight series and, you know, trailed in all 3 of these games early on against the New York Mets, you know, never more than yesterday, where you got a really shaky start from Quinn Priester. You know, I believe this was now 13 straight wins for the Brewers in games that Priester has started, but he just looked off from the jump. You know, he had the leadoff hitter. I think it was Lindor down 0-2 and ends up hitting him. You know, Soto gets on base and things just got away from Priester early on. They gave him some run support. Then he gives up 2 more in the next inning. But this ended up being the biggest come from behind win of the season for the Brewers. Isaac Collins, of course, walking it off in the bottom of the ninth. Isaac Collins now plus 100, Jeff, for NL Rookie of the Year, just behind Drake Baldwin in Atlanta at minus 120. You look at his last 31 games, Collins, that is, since the start of July. He's hitting 358, 449, 541, 39 hits, 21 RBIs, 5 steals, 4 homers in those 31 games. Is there a value here at plus 100 on Collins for Rookie of the Year?
I would take the field still. I mean, look how quickly Collins came into the hunt. I mean, it was going to be Jacob Mizorowski for a while, his teammate that was, and I, yes, yeah. I got my daily mispronunciation of the Miz, but he was a minus favorite for a while. Now he's been on the IL. So, yeah. Of course, it changes. It swaps again. The point is, it's been a very fluid market. I would expect continued fluidity. Collins was not a highly touted prospect coming in. This isn't one of those like, oh, yeah, finally he's hitting his own. You know, this is a super prospect where we were waiting for this to happen. So I'd expect more fluidity. I expect more changes. I just wouldn't bet this. I would pass it.
Okay, that's fair. So Brewers now up 6 games in the NL Central with the Cubs losing to the Cardinals last night. They are 23-4 in their last 27 games, which of course coincides with Andrew Vaughn joining the roster. Am I right, Jeff, as a Brewers fan to be a little concerned about peaking too early? Do you buy into that narrative in Major League Baseball? It feels like there is no possible way that they can sustain. Well, it is. It's a great problem to have, but it just feels like there's no way they can sustain this. They can't be this hot when they need to be this hot in September and October.
There's no ability to time your hot streaks. You're hot when you're hot. Yes, it's a natural inclination is to feel that way. I don't think there's any way you can't feel that way if you're a fan, especially a fan of a team that is a little, not downtrodden, but also not burdened with high expectations. Still like the fourth highest World Series odds. The Dodgers are still a heavy World Series favorite. You know, you can find them anywhere from like, I think, plus 270 to plus 350. And the next highest is like plus 800, which it just shows that everyone still expects the Dodgers and the Phillies are the top two teams in the World Series odds, the top two teams in the National League. As we're seeing it now, 300 and 700 respectively for those two teams. The Brewers, I mean, you know, you have to look a lot of different places. 11-1 we're seeing over at some places there. Yeah. I jump on that as a value. I'd be excited about that. And the reason why is I think they have the pitching that could actually compete in the playoffs. We saw the head-to-head against the Brewers versus the Dodgers after all.
Right. That's the big differentiator for this team, because I think offensively they're just kind of doing what the Brewers have done so many times over the last decade, which is, you know, you look up and down the order and you're like, okay, yeah, I know Christian Yelich. I know Jackson Churio, who of course is on the IL right now, but it feels like going into all of these games, you know, especially when you're playing a team like the Dodgers or the Mets this past weekend, like you compare the lineups, you're like, well, the other team's lineup looks a lot better, but these 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys for the Brewers, it feel like they're just coming through every single night. And I have my concerns, Jeff, that can continue.
Fair.
They get Pittsburgh and Cincinnati this week, huge 5-game series coming up at Wrigley Field next week. I think that might ultimately decide whether or not the Cubs have a chance to win the NL Central. The other side of this series, by the way, the New York Mets have now lost 7 in a row. They've fallen into the last wild card spot in the NL, now up just 1.5 games on your Reds.
Yeah, it's hard times in New York baseball right now. The Yankees and the Mets, both pretty sour. If you look at that, both teams tried to add to their bullpen. Both teams have had struggles in their bullpen. We saw that collapse last night by the Mets, for instance, against the Brewers. I think the Mets will be okay still. I still look at that team, and I think the offense will carry the day. But I will say that starting pitching is a really, really big concern. They can't get anybody to go 6 innings on that team. They don't have an ace. Kodai Senga is not pitching like an ace. He's not getting the strikeouts that he did earlier in the season. Sean Manaea hasn't come all the way back. You know, he had that significant injury in spring training, and he just hasn't really been that guy. We've seen Clay Holmes slow down. As someone who's blown past his career high in innings, you'd expect that. He's 40 innings over his career high. So you would expect for him to kind of have some issues slowing up. He might even be 50 innings over. I need to get the precise number. But point is, they don't have an ace, and they may not have a number two. They have a collection of number three starters. And I think when you get to the playoffs, that is definitely a concern. Give me the Brewers rotation over the Mets, and it's not even close.
That is a sentence that has not been said very often in Major League Baseball history.
Absolutely, it has not. All right, we got a play it or pass it coming up. But first, did you know that RotoWire has a brand new look and even better fantasy football draft tools for the 2025 season? Whether you're using the Draft Assistant to get real-time insights as you draft, customize your own strategy with the Draft Plan Creator, or testing scenarios with the powerful Draft Simulator, RotoWire gives you everything you need to draft with confidence. And right now, VSiN followers get an exclusive offer. Head to rotowire.com, enter promo code VSiN at checkout, and get 15% off any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. All right, Nick, we're excited for a player to pass it. We saw a little bit of preseason football over the weekends, plenty to react to there. So we'll be hitting both of that, including talking about maybe some of some fancy takes mixed in there as well. So huge weekend for overs and underdogs in the first round of the preseason as well. We'll see if that's sustainable. All that and more coming up next. This is Prop Points. Nick and I will be right back with Play It or Pass It.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you, playing a game of Play It or Pass It, taking a look at some MLB props for tonight. We'll do some NFL player futures as well. Still got John McKechnie stopping by the show next segment to talk some college football. We'll give you all of our best bets in Major League Baseball to round things out. Jeff, you know the drill. Play it or pass it. I'm giving you a prop. You're going to evaluate that prop, and you are going to decide, are you playing it or are you passing it? Pretty simple stuff. We'll start with Yoshi Yamamoto. We're looking at a strikeout prop tonight going up against the Angels. Yamamoto over 6.5 Ks, minus 155. Play it or pass it.
Intrepid producer Michael Cohen knows me really well. He knows I love me some Yoshi Yamamoto. Love watching him pitch out here in L.A. Super fun to watch. You know, the strikeouts have been there for the most part there. Three of his last four starts, he's gotten to that level, including the only one he came up short on was six strikeouts. So, hey, it looks great. Angels, they've struck out 26.2% of the time in the last 30 days. That's second highest in Major League Baseball. They do tend to even strike out more at home, which is where they are today, you know, in this game against the Dodgers. It's second in MLB. It's a high strikeout rate. The only precaution here is the price. Minus 155, I don't really love that for my strikeout props. You know, we have certain levels that I feel comfortable with. I want minus 120, minus 130, I feel better about with strikeout props. Things can go sideways sometimes. Maybe he has a bad start. Maybe, you know, they clip his innings usage. I will say the Dodgers bullpen got taxed a little bit over the last couple of days against the Blue Jays, so they'll probably want Yamamoto to go deeper into the game. I'm gonna say play it, but I'm also going to say look around and find the best price you can. Right now, the best price I see is at using RotoWire's odd scraping tool there for betting props is minus 148 at FanDuel. That check was done about 30 minutes ago. Search around, find the best price you can if you're in on that. I do like the prop. I don't like the price.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough. We'll throw you a hitter prop next year, Jeff. Play it or pass it. Sal Perez to record an RBI tonight, plus 135 Royals at home against the Nationals.
Yes, this is a fun one here because he's going up against Cade Cavalli, who missed like basically all the last three seasons with various arm injuries. Big time prospect at one point in time for the Nationals. He looked good in his debut last week. He didn't go five innings, and that's one of the things that I think that kind of points in our favor because that Nationals bullpen is just awful. It's stripped down to begin with. It wasn't good to begin with, and it got stripped down at the trade deadline. I don't really love, the matchup against Cavalli. Also, Sal Perez hasn't been hitting well in the last week. 2 for 25 last week. I don't know if that carries over to this, though. I think sometimes we get too caught up in recency bias there. I will say that Perez had been hitting pretty well over the last 2 months prior to last week. So I think that probably carries more than the last week or so. I'm going to play it, especially because we're getting plus 135.
All right, one more baseball prop to throw your way before we move over to some NFL player futures. Taking a look at Garrett Crochet going up against the Houston Astros in Houston tonight. Crochet trying to chase down Tarek Skubal for the Cy Young Award. Plus 150 right now. Skubal at minus 200. Garrett Crochet over 7.5 Ks tonight, minus 105. Play it or pass it.
I mean, it sounds great. 8 Ks last time, 10 Ks the time before. Missed against the Cubs, but 9 Ks against Tampa Bay. Over for the course of the season, you know, he's right up there with Tarek Skubal in the Cy Young chase. We want to get behind Garrett Crochet. 31% strikeout rate. Sure, why not? Why not is the matchup. The matchup is against the Houston Astros. They don't strike out a whole lot. 20.5% over the last 30. It's been historically lower than that even. Crochet didn't get to face the Astros in their home series in Boston. This is in Houston. Houston is middle of the pack offensively the last 30 days, but against left-handed pitching, second in WOBA, second in WRC+. I think there are too many negatives here, too many ways to miss on this one here. I'm not going to bet the under, but I'm going to pass the over. At minus 105, there's not even much of a payout for the tough matchup there against the Astros, so I'm going to pass it. So that wraps up our baseball player to pass it props. We'll hit football in just a second. But first, Circuit Survivor, the quest for $14.2 million, is a 10-part documentary series following the drama, strategy, and heartbreak inside the world's largest legal football contest. You can catch the final 5 episodes starting tomorrow, August 12th through 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern. Did you miss an episode? You can watch the first 5 episodes now at VSiN.com/survivor. All right, Nick, let's turn to football. We'll get your play in and passes here. We spent a decent amount of time earlier today on SiriusXM Fantasy talking about Bo Nix, and I think we've done it on this channel as well. Mm-hmm. Over 3,550.5 passing yards, minus 110. Play it or pass it?
I'm playing this one. We're not going to mince words here, Jeff. I'm playing this. I'm coming around on Bo Nix, somebody I was very skeptical of going into last season. You know, first 4 weeks of the year, I'm like, all right, I feel pretty good about my evaluation. But something clicked for Bo Nix midseason. We saw a completely different version of him. And look, everything coming out of Broncos camp, specifically from Sean Payton, is that he loves his quarterback. I think he is really, really comfortable with the direction of this franchise being led by Bo Nix, and I think he's expecting a significant leap up in year two. So you look at the numbers from last year, 16 quarterbacks ended up going over this number, including Bo Nix, who finished with 3,775 yards. Caleb Williams, your only quarterback who started all 17 games and did not get there. So this is another one of those futures where it's like, man, if he stays healthy, it's going to be really hard for him to not go over. You know, you're looking at needing to average about 208 yards per game. And again, keep in mind, Bo Nix got off to an extremely shaky start last year, averaged just 178 yards per game over his first 7 starts. He had that terrible game in week 1 against Seattle, 138 yards, at 60 yards on 25 attempts in week 4 against the Jets. But you look at week 8 onward, 253 yards per game for Bo Nix, completed 70% of his passes in that span. That would put him, in terms of the yards per game number, about the same as Sam Darnold, about the same as Geno Smith on the full season. I think that's pretty doable for Bo Nix if you're forecasting a step up. Again, Sean Payton had said nothing but positive things about Bo Nix. I think the Broncos really believe internally that he can be a top 10, top 7 type of quarterback in the NFL. They should have an upgraded rushing attack. Maybe you worry a little bit about the volume, but it's not like the Broncos were whipping the ball around a ton last year. They were middle of the pack, 11th in terms of total team pass attempts. So something that to me should be pretty replicable. Yes, you have some questions about the wide receivers beyond Cortland Sutton, but they went out and brought in a huge, huge addition this offseason, a major weapon in Evan Ingram. So I feel even better about Bo Nix after the Ingram addition than I did, you know, the way we saw him finish the season. I'm playing this one, no question.
You know, I've been skeptical of Bo Nix, but, you know, who am I to kind of dispute Sean Payton's praise? So I could be wrong about that one there. Let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about Aaron Jones. Over 725.5 rushing yards, minus 105. Mm-hmm. I've been paying attention to you all season here on VSiN. I already know what you're going to say, but go ahead. Play it or pass it, Nick.
I know. And this is a low enough number that I really thought about playing it, but I need to maintain the party line here. I'm out on Aaron Jones for fantasy. I think this is going to be more and more Jordan Mason's backfield as the season goes along. Now, Jones has gone over this number in 7 of his last 8 seasons, really since he became a full-time starter. Went under 2 seasons ago, played only 11 games in that final year in Green Bay. If he stays healthy, even if I think Jordan Mason is going to be the 1A to Aaron Jones 1B as the season goes along, there's still a world in which he gets there, in which Jordan Mason goes over this number, maybe relatively comfortably. But Aaron Jones turns 31 in December, did not miss a game last year for just the second time in his career. I don't think that's going to happen again. This is a guy who's had so many, you know, kind of nicks and cuts type of injuries over the years. I don't think we can count on a full season at this point in his career. 31 players did hit this number last year. Ironically, Jordan Mason was the only one to get there in fewer than 14 games. I personally am expecting Aaron Jones to miss 3, 4, 5 games over the course of the season. I know it can be dicey trying to project injuries, but I got to stay away from this one. I don't think he's going to see the volume. I don't think he's going to play enough games to get there.
All right, very good. Let's move on to Ladd McConkey. Over 6.5 receiving touchdowns. Get at a plus 100 price. Play it or pass it.
Yeah, really interesting number for McConkey. I wouldn't have been surprised if this came in at 7.5, to be honest, but we're getting this at plus money. I think we'll play this one. 34 receivers hit this mark last season, including McConkey, who finished right at 7 touchdowns. Did miss one game. Did take a little bit for him to get going early in the season. But, you know, much like Bo Nix, you know, we really started to see Ladd McConkey become that consistent week-to-week receiver later in the season. You take his last 11 games, including that playoff loss to Houston, he averaged 8 targets, over 6 catches per game, 98 yards, roughly a half a touchdown per game. Now, the Keenan Allen addition, that does complicate things a little bit here. You know, I'm not expecting big things out of Keenan Allen at age 33. You know, McConkey, to me, is still the clear number one option for the Chargers, but this is a guy who does not see a ton of targets in the red zone. Only 8 targets in the red zone last year. Did catch 7 of those for 5 of his 7 touchdowns. Ideally, we would see that number rise. You know, this is not a team that throws the ball a ton in the red zone. Guys like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, David Moore, Tyler Lockett all had more red zone targets than McConkey last year. So I do worry a little bit about Keenan Allen encroaching on that. But is Keenan Allen going to stay healthy? Are there enough other options in this Chargers wide receiver core, tight end group to really threaten this? I don't think they are. If you're giving me this at plus money, I'm going to play it.
All right, we got time for a quick bonus one. LA Chargers over 9.5 wins. -105. Play it or pass it.
Well, I gave that one out last week, Jeff. We got to double down and play it. Slater injury worries me a little bit, but we'll hold firm.
College football, John McKechnie coming up next. This is Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, hanging out with you. Just a reminder, if you missed anything from today's show, any of our previous shows, you can download our Prop Points podcast. Just search Prop Points wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, etc. You can find everything, of course, archived on VSiN.com and the VSiN Watch app as well. We're heading over to the Progressive guest line, welcoming in our friend John McKechnie, one of our football experts over at RotoWire. You can check him out on Twitter at John's Tailgate. John, you are just gallivanting around Croatia for your honeymoon. Congrats on that. Great to have you back and looking forward to diving in on some college football with you. Now, you contributed to the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, which is available now. Go check that out over at VSiN.com/subscribe. You're looking at Penn State as a national championship pick, 7-1 right now to win the Natty, plus 240 to win the Big Ten, minus 330 right now to make the college football playoff. State the case. What do you like about Penn State?
I love this Penn State team. You know, it's a team that was knocking on the door a year ago, you know, came up short, obviously, in the semifinal against Notre Dame. But what I love about Penn State and what kind of makes them different from some of those other like kind of elite contenders, like your Texas's, like your Ohio State's, like your Georgia's, is there's a lot of continuity, particularly at the quarterback spot. This is Drew Aller's fourth year starting a quarterback for Penn State, a lot of experience under his belt in a way that guys like Arch Manning, Julian Sain, Gunnar Stockton do not have. Penn State also has the best backfield in college football, for my money, between Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. Obviously, losing Tyler Warren's a big deal, and everything like that. And I think a lot of people had quibbles about the receiving core last year. The good news is none of those guys are really back. They produced 0 yards against Notre Dame in the college football playoff. Don't have to worry about that. They bring in a guy like Trevor Peña, who was a big contributor at Syracuse a year ago. I think that what they have at the tight end spot will be able to supplement what was left behind by Tyler Warren. Defense, James Franklin has done a really good job recruiting that side of the ball. So talent and continuity and experience are all there with this Penn State team. And I think you look additionally at this schedule, there's some toughies. At Iowa is going to be no joke. I think a lot of people are circling the game against Oregon, the whiteout game in Happy Valley, as sort of like the bellwether for, you know, how the season is going to go for both Penn State and for Oregon. I think Penn State romps them and just kind of makes a big statement there at the end of September, and we're kind of off to the races from there. Now, honestly, I do expect Penn State to lose to Ohio State. That's just kind of what they do. But once we get into the playoff, anything can happen. I think that this team, is particularly with these odds, is something that I'm very interested in getting some action on.
Let's stick in the Big Ten, talk a little Oregon. They were the number one seed in the college football playoff last year. Many people forget that. They were the one. The Ohio State was the 8. Oregon won the Big Ten title over Penn State last year. Obviously, they lose Dylan Gabriel. Is it just that has you missing them, having them miss the playoff this year? Or is there something else that has you down on Oregon this year?
There's a lot of things that I think are working against Oregon that the people aren't making a big enough deal about just yet. Think about when Dan Lanning took over at Oregon in 2022. Bo Nix is his guy at quarterback. Bo Nix had made 34 starts at Auburn. Last year, you look at Dylan Gabriel coming in, he had 50 starts under his belt before taking over at Oregon. This year, we think it's going to be Dante Moore, who, you know, in his own right was a huge recruit at UCLA. He has fewer than 10 career starts. So the experience factor that Dan Lanning has kind of been able to lean on at the quarterback position, which is extremely important, that's not really there. We don't really know who Dante Moore is at this level there. And what we do know, or what has been on the sample thus far, mostly from UCLA, not overly impressive. So I'm a little bit worried that things go sideways there. You lose a guy like Tez Johnson, who carried the passing game, and Terrence Ferguson from last year at tight end. That's a big problem. They were going to have Evan Stewart back at receiver. It looks like he's not going to be playing this year due to a knee injury. You bring in Mekhi Hughes at running back from Tulane. That's promising. But, I think you look at this offense that's been able to get by running the ball with Bucky Irving and Jordan James the last couple of years. I think a lot of that has to do with them having a great quarterback play. That's not a given this year. That overall, Oregon's like 107th in returning production this year on offense, 95th on defense. That's too much. That's just simply too much new and different. I think that this is a down year for Oregon. I think that, you know, the magic number to miss the playoffs, I think, is 3 losses. I think we have 3 losses on the schedule here.
We're chatting with John McKechnie, one of our football experts over at RotoWire. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. John, let's head over to the Big 12. Myself and Brandon Kravitz talked to Big 12 last week. I'm in on Utah. I'm in on Texas Tech. I mean, this is one of the most up-for-grabs conferences across the nation. You know, you scroll down a little bit, you see the Houston Cougars at 35-1 to win the Big 12. Now, I don't know if you're going that far, but I know you're at least looking at the win total for Houston.
I am looking at the win total for Houston. I think that this is a Cougs team that really does have some talent. I like Willie Fritz, the coach there. I think, you know, another year of experience being in the mix there at Houston is only going to help things. You know, the system getting a little bit further entrenched. They bring in a quarterback in Connor Wiegman, who, you know, similar to Dante Moore, did not have a great first stop in his college experience, despite being, you know, a really highly touted recruit coming out of high school. Obviously, things didn't go super well for him at Texas A&M. But I think dropping to Houston is going to – he needed that change of scenery. I think this suits him really well. And they have a tight end who's one of the, like, the best tight ends, at least from the group of five ranks a year ago, and Tanner Colziel coming over. So I think that there's some decent weaponry there, and I think it's a workable schedule for the most part. I think and what we'll get into this when we talk a little bit more Big 12, but the Big 12 is so wide open. Like, anyone can beat anyone any given week, and that at once can make you a little skeptical of the favorites. It can also enable you to kind of talk yourself into some of those more underdog or long shot type of teams. And the bar that we have to clear here is 7 wins. I think we can get there with Houston. I mean, you look at that non-con, not overly imposing. What I do think, though, and what I do get a little bit concerned about is we kind of need this one to be wrapped up before we get to like the end of the season, because those last two games against TCU and Baylor, hard to really expect them to win those ones. So we got to get 7 by November 7.
Just as a quick aside, looking at these like conference to win the conference bets, I got to be really tough now with these mega conferences. So much swings on one game, and the strength of schedule. You talked about Houston not having a super imposing non-conference, but then having to finish that way. My brother, he's a K-Stater, and they don't play Arizona State. I know a lot of people are high on Arizona State this year, and their quarterback Sam Leavitt is a Heisman long shot there as well. It's got to be tough. And just talk a little Arizona State for me. Talk a little Sam Leavitt.
Yeah, I mean, the Big 12 is the poster child for what you're talking about there, Jeff. I mean, you look at the favorites in the Big 12. I think there's a cluster of all 6-1 programs. I think Arizona State's among them. I think Utah is among them as well. So what the story that tells me from the odds makers is we don't really know. There's like 5-6 teams I think you can make a legitimate case to win the Big 12 this year. I think Kansas State absolutely has a chance. I think them getting Avery Johnson back was huge. I think that, he's someone that had some Heisman buzz going into last year, maybe a little bit of a post-hype guy this year. But Arizona State is fascinating. I mean, they're the reason why they didn't do a preseason poll for Big 12 media days, because they were voted dead last going into last year. And then they just go ahead and win the Big 12. Now they lose Cam Scataboo, who's such a huge part of that offense. But I think what people are getting themselves excited about when it comes to Arizona State is not only the coach, Kenny Dillingham, and what he's been able to do there, but Sam Leavitt and Jordan Tyson. Jordan Tyson, a lot of people's minds, is the best draft eligible receiver in college football. Jeremiah Smith, we're not there yet. And same with Ryan Williams, but that Leavitt and Williams, or Leavitt and Tyson connection is legit. I think that they're going to be able to kind of replace Scataboo in the aggregate as well. And, it's going to be a mosh pit. I think that we could see Arizona State slip up once or twice. It's just kind of like the nature of the Big 12. It's hard to always go with the favorites when it comes to this conference. Anyone can have anyone's number any given week, whereas the Big 10 or the ACC or the SEC, there's a little bit more of like the haves and the have-nots. So ultimately, Arizona State has as good a chance of anyone, but I'm not betting it just because the sheer chaos that comes with the Big 12. I think I'd look a little bit elsewhere.
John McKechnie, everybody, check him out on Twitter at Johns_tailgate. Find all of his great work for us over at RotoWire. Folks, the season's biggest edges start before kickoff. You could get yours with VSiN Pro. Right now, new subscribers get both of our betting guides, NFL and college football, your 1-2 punch for smart betting. These guides are packed with team previews, power ratings, betting systems, and all the best bets from VSiN's top analysts. You'll also get daily best bets emails from hosts and guests, real-time betting splits and insights, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, plus full access to all the tools and data on VSiN.com. Sign up today for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual plan. Check it out at VSIN.com/subscribe. Major League Baseball best bets coming your way next.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson finishing out the show with some best bets for tonight's Major League Baseball slate. We'll have our G-Bank best bets in just a moment as well. Coming up after us, it's Mark Melusis stepping in for Adam Schein on Make It Rain. Greg Peterson, he's going to stop by the show to bring some MLB insights, help you find some value on tonight's slate. Mitch Moss, Paulie Howard coming your way at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's Follow the Money. Beast in Primetime with Tim Murray and Will Hill starting up at 7. So make sure you stick around for all that. Jeff, before we get to all of your plays in Major League Baseball, we did get an update on the Landon Dickerson injury. We told you he was carted off of practice earlier today. According to Adam Schefter of ESPN, believed to be dealing with a meniscus injury. So still no immediate timetable. You know, we've seen these play out for multiple players, multiple sports over the years. Sometimes you go with the procedure. Sometimes guys try to play through it. But at least it does appear that Landon Dickerson has avoided the worst case scenario with that being an ACL.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, meniscus can still sideline you for a while. It's, you know, sometimes they go in and do the scope and then you find something else inside. That's what happened with Tristan Wirfs, for instance, there. So not out of the woods yet, but, you know, at least it, as far as news goes, it could be worse for sure. So we'll it still puts us on wait and see for the start of the season for Dickerson there.
Yep, Eagles still holding as a 7-point favorite at home against the Cowboys in week one. All right, let's turn our attention to Monday's Major League Baseball slate. We'll get all of Jeff Erickson's best bets, and we'll start with your team, Jeff, taking on the Phillies at home. We got the Reds as slight favorites on the money line, total up at 9.5. Taijuan Walker going up against Andrew Abbott. Got a money line play to start us off.
Yes, sir. So Reds are favored in this one, -126, Philly +104, total 9.5. This line is a bet against Taijuan Walker. I respect that because I think he is a little bit overvalued in terms of, like, I think that ERA in the mid threes is a little bit of a mirage. It's also an endorsement of Andrew Abbott, and I fear that. I don't really trust Abbott against this Phillies lineup, a really strong lineup. Abbott struggled against them last time out, 4 earned runs and only 3 1/3 innings, only 2 Ks against them. Philly against left-handed starting pitchers has a 3.19 WOBA, 103 WRC+. Walker, on the other hand, didn't face the Reds earlier this season, 2.8 road ERA. I think that's totally a mirage, and in this ballpark, that's the case here for sure. I do think there'll be plenty of runs scored in this game here. There's very little wind in this one. It's hot, 89 degrees at game time. Now, those things kind of suggest that the ball will be flying in Great American Small Park. I think anytime you get a team as good as the Phillies getting plus money against a mid opponent like the Reds, you take it. +104 on the money line. It's not like it's peak Hunter Green on the mound. It's not like it's going up against Paul Skeens. No, it's against Andrew Abbott. All-star Andrew, but still, I think this is some value.
All right, let's take a look at the Dodgers and the Angels. We did discuss the Yoshi Yamamoto prop markets earlier in the show. Yamamoto taking on Jose Soriano tonight. Dodgers big favorites on the road, as you'd expect. That money line price coming in at -180. Total sitting at 8. I know you're looking at a team total here, and looking at the walks prop for Soriano, Jeff.
Yeah, indeed. Yamamoto, I love talking to Yoshi Yamamoto. I think he's a true ace, and I don't think he's always portrayed as such. That's why I was playing it instead of playing it and passing in the player pass it segment earlier. Didn't get to face the Angels earlier in the series. Soriano at home, by the way, his opposing pitcher, though, 5.56 ERA, 1.56 whip, and he has a 10.4 walk percent on the season. The Dodgers do take a lot of walks. Ask Eric Lauer managers from last night, or Jeff Hoffman from last night as well. I think the Dodgers against right-handed are a team that walks a lot as well. So we're going to, you know me, over 10% walk rate plus a high walking team, over 2.5 walks. Unfortunately, -120 is the rate here. I'll still pay that price, but I'm also going to back the Dodgers offense as a whole. Over 4.5 on the team total, -125. I think the Dodgers are in a pretty good shape here. It's a bit of a mismatch.
All right, Jeff, let's take a look at Twins-Yankees. Yankees desperately need to get back on the right side of things. Zebby Matthews going up against Will Warren. Yankees are big favorites tonight. Another higher total coming in at 9, and you are eyeing up that total.
I am. And this is interesting here because, hey, you know, the Twins, downtrodden Twins, they've traded away their whole bullpen. should be a big over game, and it might be. But that nine is it's a high number. It's mine, you know, nine is a decent sized number here. We're used to getting a lot of 7.5s, 8.5s here. It's a full nine. Yankees are continuing to struggle overall, lost 2 of 3 of the Astros. Maybe this is a respite facing the Twins. The Twins are a team that is, you know, a team that gets pounded, I think, by the Yankees historically. However, they do get Byron Buxton back today. They've already posted the lineup with him leading off. I like Zebby Matthews. I like Will Warren a little bit. You know, if you look at what Warren's done lately, Warren in his last two starts, no earned runs against the Rangers the last time out, against the Rays before that, only one earned run, two earned runs against a really good Phillies lineup earlier this season down in the Bronx. So, you know, I think he's kind of found whatever he had been missing for a while. I have a little faith in that. And Zebby Matthews is all over the place. Two of his last three outings have been really good, though. At Detroit, home against the Nats. His Boston start was rough. And Boston starts have been rough lately there, too. I think there's some value in the under in this one here. At minus 112, it's a pretty high number. So let's go under on this one. I'm going to be a giant hypocrite, though, when we talk about our next game in the total.
Well, that next game is Pirates Brewers. Milwaukee looking to push that winning streak up to double digits. And we continue to see the money line price swell in favor of the Brewers. Was hanging around minus 200 earlier today, now minus 217 in favor of Milwaukee. Another total hanging at 9. Andrew Heaney taking on Jose Quintana.
Indeed. Milwaukee's never going to lose again, Nick. I think they're unbeatable. I think they should be broken up. Break up big Milwaukee. Break up big Midwest teams. Oh, wait, they're not big, but okay. Two left-handers on the mound, and Heaney and Quintana. Heaney has been, you know, he was good in his start against the San Francisco Giants, but for the most part, he's been torchified. 7 runs in 4 innings against the Brewers. And the Pittsburgh bullpen is really shaky right now. They gave up a ton of runs against the Reds yesterday, got worked really hard through a lot of innings. I think that this is going to be a game where it gets out of hand late. And that's the way Milwaukee games have been going lately, too. So, again, even though I talked about the 9 runs being a high number, it's minus 102 on the over. I kind of like it. I'm going to go with the over in this game because I find no value in the money line. 217 is just way too high to pay because – you know, even though I like the Brewers' chances of winning this game, it's just too high of a price to pay. Maybe you find a Quintana to win bet or something like that, or maybe you go first five. Maybe that's a way to end around this here. But I like the over 9 as a whole as a good bet.
All right, before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the night, Jeff, anything for you in Padres, Giants, or Sox, Astros?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that San Diego is getting plus money right now. They're the team that's red hot. Granted, they're on the road, and I get that there. They're going against Logan Webb. They're 28-32 on the road. They're 38-20 at home. So you can see they draw their power from home. But they just finished a really good home stand here. They've played themselves into the second wild card. San Francisco has played better of late, although the last two games against the Nats, not so much. I think getting plus money, even with the pitching matchup of Darvish versus Logan Webb, I think that's interesting at plus 109. So let's go that way.
Our best bets of the night are brought to you, as always, by the good folks over at GBank. You can get the GBank Visa Signature Card right now, built with sports bettors in mind. Most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances, even when you're using your own money. GBank treats them as regular purchases. That means no cash advance fees, saving you 3 to 5% on every deposit. Plus, you'll earn 1% cash back on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions. And you'll get 2% cash back on everything else you buy. You can apply now over at vsin.com/gbank. That's vsin.com/gbank. All right, Jeff, best bet of the night. Where are we going?
Well, we're going to go to Cincinnati. We're going to go with the Phillies on the money line. I'm a big fan of better teams getting plus money on the money line. We got both the Phillies doing that in Cincinnati, and we have the Padres doing that in San Francisco. So I like the framework of both of those bets.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to join you on that over 9 in Pirates Brewers. You sold me on that one. I think we should see a better Brewers lineup out there today. 3 regulars getting rest on Sunday. So I think the Brewers up their winning ways. I think we get some runs on the board. I'm also going to go to a run line, something I don't do very often. Cardinals -1.5 versus the Colorado Rockies. Get that at minus 110. Rockies have been the second worst road run line team in Major League Baseball this season. Only Michael Cohen's New York Yankees have been worse. They failed to cover the run line in six of their last seven. Sending Chase Dolander to the mound tonight, Jeff. This is going to be his first start in over a month. He was down in the minors working on some things, was terrible in three of those starts. So I think the Cardinals get a big win tonight at home against Colorado. That's going to wrap the Monday edition of Prop Points. We'll be back with you tomorrow afternoon. Stick around here on VSiN. Make it rain. Mark Melusis coming your way next.